take all of that information on whatever that topic is, boil it down and get your own belief behind it and say, like, this is where I stand on this issue. And then tell everyone you know what your stance is and go out of your way to talk to the thought leaders within that space about what your vision is and you know, how you view it and why you view it that way. And I think they'll respect you, whether they agree with you or not. I think they'll respect that you took a stand on something.
I was born with several palsies.
I have always felt small.
I was told not to take risks.
I may be blind, but I teach people how to see.
And I'm proud to be an individual.
This podcast is for you, the unconventional leader.
Maybe you are the one that everyone discounted.
Maybe you struggle with fear and self-doubt.
We are here to empower the next generation of self-starters to step up.
Use their voice
and make an impact in this world.
You're listening to The Weekly Parody.
Hey guys, welcome to today's episode. If this is your first time listening, welcome. My name is Heather Parody and I am your host, and this show is dedicated to leaders, those of you who have a message burning inside of you and you are wanting to deliver it to the world, whether that is through your business or your nonprofit, or maybe you're building a brand online and you want to make an impact in this world. We are here to spur you on and encourage you in your journey because, man, we believe more people need to step up into their calling and do what they feel like they were created to do. So that's what we're all about. And today we are super excited to have Todd Plotkin with us. He is the founder of Green Buzz Agency. And what we're talking about today is video content, incorporating video into your business, your organization, to create compelling stories that engage your audience and ultimately get your message heard. Green Buzz Agency has worked with some incredible organizations like the American Red Cross, Make-A-Wish Foundation, Upworthy, and they have won, get this, 3 Emmys. So as you can imagine, I was so honored to connect with Todd and super excited to find out he's just a really down-to-earth, kind guy and was just super generous with his time and his energy and shares with us not only how to create this compelling content, but how to do it at a low cost, how to do it in a way that is authentic to you and your brand, how to build out a team and find the right people. We cover a lot of different topics, and I loved this conversation, and I know you guys will too. But before we get started, you know I have to say it, you know it. If you have not subscribed to this podcast, please head over to iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. Hit that subscribe button. And if you have a second, you know what I'm going to say again. Leave us a review. I know all podcast hosts say that over and over again. It just goes a long way in the podcasting world. So if you can do that, that'd be awesome. Anyways, let's go ahead and just jump right into this conversation with Todd Plotkin.
So I started the agency in May of 2010, and it was just me for the first 3.5 years. And then September 2013, we added on a few folks. We had a couple clients that had big projects, and so I was able to kind of add some specialists, producers, editors, motion graphic designers. And so for 5 years, just slowly kind of been building from there and kind of getting to the point we're at today.
That's really impressive that it's only been, yeah, but that's less than 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
It was great. I mean, I did, one of the lucky things was I was able to do freelancing at my last position. It was professional sports. I was working for the Washington Wizards and the NBA, and professional sports is notorious for not necessarily paying super well. And so the way that they offset that is they allowed you to do freelance and as much freelance as you wanted, as long as you delivered everything you needed to. And so as long as the video content was being delivered for the team, they let me kind of go out there and freelance. And so I did have a year and a half or a year and 9 months where I got to start to kind of, you know, feel out what it was like to start a production company. How did I go about getting clients and kind of proving what were they looking for, what was, you know, important to them as they made the decision as to whether or not to go with me or one of the other 100 video production companies in the DC area. So that was fortuitous that I was able to have a full-time position that was so open to me doing freelance work.
Wow. So we have a lot of people who listen who do freelance work themselves. Was it your intention to make it into a thriving production company, or at the beginning were you just saying, hey, I'm going to freelance, and it was kind of a surprise where it's gone?
Yeah, it was my intention not to work somewhere 9 to 5. I don't feel like I thrive in that environment. I did try to start a production company about a year after I graduated from college, and I did not know enough about business. I did not know enough about video production. And so I was able to work at other production houses, work for the Wizards, work at the Washington Post, and glean a lot of insight into things that work and don't work on the business side. And then just also really up my game when it came to video production. So that combination allowed me to give it a shot again. But really the intention was not to have a company or a big company. It was really just not to work someplace in a 9 to 5 environment.
Oh, I hear you. So what was I'm kind of going off track a little bit, but you got me curious. What were some key things that you did different the second time around when you started Green Buzz, as opposed to when you out of college, when you tried and it didn't work? What are some key things that you did different that made you successful?
Yeah, I'm not as much of a business planner or traditional, I'm going to put together a business plan. I think all I really wanted to focus on the second time around was making sure that I knew how to go and get a client and to do the whole process with the client where they were satisfied at the end and they would potentially hire me again for another project. So I just put a lot of effort into that, and I tried a lot of different formats. It was in the early days of LinkedIn. I did a lot of cold LinkedIn messaging, which at that point in time was free. There was no email. So I spent one whole weekend. I started at 6 o'clock when I got home from work, all the way through, midnight on a Sunday. And I sent out about 500 cold LinkedIn emails. Through that process, I learned about the power of just following up with people on email, and you can send out 30 emails and get 0 responses, and then you can send those 30 follow-ups and get 12 responses, and so it makes a huge difference to just follow up. So I was doing that. There was a lot of networking receptions going on in DC at the time. It was 2008. It was during the financial crisis, and so a lot of people were trying to figure out, if my job is not secure, what can I do to feel more secure? And so you had this huge community of business folks going out to networking receptions, and there were specialized ones. You had for public relations professionals, you had PRSA, you had American Marketing Association for the marketing folks, Ad Club, Social Media Club, and there were so many of them, and they were active, they were vibrant. You'd get 50, 100 people out at these events. And they were consistent. They were, 2-3 times a week. So I was doing a lot of that, and it took me time to figure out the top level networking is taking place at conferences and what conferences work better. Because I go to a lot of conferences. I go to a lot of conferences to see, is my audience here? Does this make sense for me to go to, or is it not here? Like Collision Conference is a great conference. A lot of fun. My audience is not there. The people that ultimately would hire Green Buzz Agency are not there for the most part, as opposed to last week I was in Cleveland at Content Marketing World, and it felt like every person I met was a potential person I could collaborate with. So, it's about trial and error and figuring out what's the best use of your time.
Yeah. So you mentioned your target audience, and I read that your target audience kind of found you, that you didn't necessarily set out to reach the people that you're reaching. So if you could kind of tell us a little bit about who your clients are and kind of how they found you.
Well, we have a lot of clients. We have around 200 clients.
Wow.
And I think that a lot of times the most notable ones, the ones that when people are applying here, they bring up, and they are the samples. If you go to our website and you look at our video, these are the ones that we're highlighting because we've had a lot of success with them. We've won Emmys. We have great metrics, 30 million views for some of the content that we've created, but they're feel good. They're uplifting emotional videos for organizations doing great work. So we do a lot of work with Make-A-Wish Foundation, American Red Cross, Upworthy. We do a lot of collaboration with Upworthy if people are familiar with them. And then we'll do other projects with American Diabetes Association or ACLU, Children's Hospital Network. We do a ton of work with them. So there's a lot of those clients that are giving back, are nonprofits that have a heart and want to do good. And you're right, we definitely did not start out saying we're a video production company and our whole focus is this audience. What I think happened is we spent a lot of time in the early days trying to figure out how do we take the techniques and the storytelling that you see in movies and in premium television, your HBO, your Netflix, and how do we apply that to the corporate world? Because when you back then, and now it's different, I would say, you know, in 8 to 10 years, it's really changed and corporate's really caught up. But back then, corporate was thought of as very static. The camera never moved. How do we bring movement to it? And so everything we did was to heighten that sense of storytelling and emotion in the content itself. And Make-A-Wish Mid-Atlantic, the regional chapter, there's 60 chapters of Make-A-Wish, saw our pieces, felt like we were a good fit for their annual gala. That's where they raise a lot of their money. They have a DC and a Baltimore gala annually. And that's, you know, what they do. They play the video at the end of the night. They have a meal. The lights go down at the end of the meal. They show the video, and then afterwards they ask people to donate. So the video is critical to them, and they need to be able to take people on an emotional roller coaster. They need to be able to take them on the highs that the children are going through and the families of the children, as well as the lows, and just show people this is where the money is going. And so because we were using all of these storytelling techniques from film and from premium television, we were doing it in a much more compelling manner than they had ever done before. Mm. And they felt that the video was super successful. They shared that with the heads of the chapters of the other 59 chapters. And so now our content that we're creating is really being used by more than just the regional chapter. It's being used by a variety of chapters. And that's what opened the door. So those videos we made for them won Emmys. And that's what Upworthy saw. Upworthy's like, this is the type of emotional content that we want to create. And then once you have Make-A-Wish and you have Upworthy, you know, Children's Hospital Network sees that. They reach out, American Red Cross. And so it just kind of is a snowball effect, but it wasn't the intended effect. It was these techniques for storytelling work really well with emotional stories. And, you know, we found the right client at the right time being in DC.
So how did Make-A-Wish find you?
I think Make-A-Wish found us through Google. I think they just did an AdWords search. I remember, and this might sound bad, but I didn't know a lot about Make-A-Wish when they first reached out. I didn't really know who I was talking to. And usually on those initial calls, they last 20 minutes to 45 minutes. And the call lasted well over 2 hours. So I was blown away by that. I mean, I was impressed. I thought it was great. It was like they were doing their due diligence. They were really researching every angle of working with us. And then I didn't hear from them for a year and a half. And then they reached out. You know, we had that conversation in January, whatever year it was. They reached out in August the next year about their Baltimore gala. The first video we did for them ever, we didn't even get a chance to shoot the actual wish itself. We were just given about 10 minutes of footage that a 14-year-old had shot on an iPhone. So we had to do a lot of recreation for that. We had to go into the home of the child and kind of reshoot some of the moments that took place. And from that point, we had gained their trust in every wish we've done since. Obviously, we've done the wish as well as some follow-up.
That's incredible. So another thing you've talked about, because I know, you know, when you're starting off with your project, your work with your freelance or just have a small team, you hear your success that, you know, you've had these videos, it's won Emmys, which congratulations, that's incredible. Yeah, and working with these big organizations, and it seems like there's just a broad gap there of, okay, how do I go from here to where he's at? And one thing that you mentioned and something I read was that you guys really took every small opportunity that was presented to you in hopes that it would turn into something bigger, and you really thrived off of that. So can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think there's one sample that absolutely exemplifies this. It's Hilton Worldwide. Hilton is a preferred, you know, we are their preferred video vendor. We do a lot of work across a lot of different departments for them. And that started out by just doing some small event coverage video of community related events that they were doing here in the DC area. No post-production involved. These were not big projects by anyone's, you know, no one would see these as and say, oh, that's a huge profit or budget or anything like that. The opportunity struck with them. We had done a handful of those small projects. They needed to do their Global Week of Service video. It needed to be cut over an 8-day period, and it just so happened to be over Thanksgiving. And they were having trouble finding someone that could do it over Thanksgiving. And so I felt like this was our shot to really get in with them and to make a difference. And that video won a ton of industry awards. They were unbelievably happy with it. And it opened the door for us to a lot of different departments within Hilton, because that's a global video. It touches all of the brands that Hilton owns, as well as multiple departments there. And so just through that one project, a lot of people knew about us. And then through word of mouth, people started reaching out to us. And then that, again, is how it just kind of snowballed from there. Yeah, I mean, how do you get to that point? I think it's about, I mean, in that one case, there was a person who had joined Hilton, who was a champion for us, who believed in us, who had hired us at his two previous jobs before. He's the one that gave me the opportunity to do those smaller projects. And he's the one that alerted to me that they were in need of someone to do this bigger, more complex project. And so he really had no reason to go to us, because at that point in time, it was just me. And Hilton is an enormous company, and they have working relationships with a lot of agencies. But he believed in me. He knew that I really cared a lot about quality, and that I wasn't going to put his reputation on the line, that he would come out with a top-notch product. And so, yeah, it was about relationship building. It was just meeting him at a networking event, going out, getting coffee with him, getting to know more about him, working with him at a couple stops, and then he gets a new job at Hilton, and he becomes an internal champion on our behalf.
Wow. Wow. What a story. This is so cool. I'm going to kind of shift gears a little bit if it's cool. And I just want to talk to you about video and why it matters and why it's important to small business owners, people who are over a nonprofit, why we should incorporate it, if you have any tips. First of all, I guess, where would someone even just get started when they may not have the talent or skill set? How can we start incorporating video into what we do in our message?
Yeah, I think what's important to know about video is the amount of money that marketing departments of all sizes are spending on video right now has gone up exponentially over the last handful of years. And if you were to go back in time 5-8 years ago, and you were looking at a business that had 200 people to 10,000 people, their marketing departments would spend a lot of money on their website. And they would redo their website every 18 months, every 2 years. And what I've seen is a lot of that money has been transferred over into video buckets, new video projects. Simultaneously, the cost of making a video has come down a huge amount. So for instance, when I started editing video back in 2003, I was on an Avid Nitro, and that edit suite, just one edit suite, cost about $130,000 for all the program and software and power behind it. And now for $1,500, you could get a MacBook Pro, you could get Adobe or Final Cut Pro as your editing software. And for a couple thousand dollars, you would have the same system with a lot more power 15 years later. The same can be said for aerial footage. You know, if you wanted to get aerial footage 5 years ago, you would have to deal with hiring a pilot, hiring a renting out an actual helicopter, all of the insurance that's associated with that. There's a lot of layers to it. And now for a couple thousand dollars, you can buy a gimbal, a GoPro and a drone, and you can go out and do as much shooting as you want. So 5 years ago, you get 1 hour out there with a pilot of a helicopter, and now you have endless for $2,000. So those are the types of things that have really brought the cost of video and high quality video down. Yeah. And there's a lot more. I'm just kind of throwing out two samples right now. But a small business, there are ways to make compelling content as a small business that won't crush you. And the easiest and most affordable way to create content would be to use existing photographs, video, and write a script yourself. So you don't have to outsource anything. You write the script yourself. You do the voiceover. You have the photographs. You have the footage. And if you don't want to work with a production company like Greenbus Agency, or you don't feel like you have that budget, what you can do is, and of course this depends on you being close to a school of higher ed, but you can reach out to a university or a college and reach out to the professors there and say, hey, do you have a student or a grad student that's interested in a project for their portfolio? Because when that student graduates, they're going to need a portfolio of different things as they enter the workforce and they apply to different agencies. And so that's, an opportunity for you to basically use what you have. If you threw an event, or you just have some footage, if you're an architect and you have footage of things that you've created before, you use that as your source material. You write the script, you do a voiceover piece, And that can be anywhere from free to $1,000 or $2,000. And so it is attainable for a small business too. And that was a really long, all over the place kind of answer to that question, but video is very important. All of the businesses, mid-size and up, are putting way more money into it than they ever have before. And there are ways, even as a small business, to create content.
Absolutely. Now, you know, there's, you mentioned it earlier, that there's two pieces to it. You have the tech side, and then you have just the emotional connection side and really being able to hone your message in. And that's one thing that you guys pride yourself on, is you're really able to hone that message in with your clients and deliver it in a way where they're being heard, their message is being heard. And that's a skill set in and of itself, is figuring out how to really tap into that, communicate, and just make that connection. So do you have any tips for that? I know that's a big piece, but
yeah, I think the emotional side of it is really about distilling down what are the one, two, or three major themes that someone watches your video will walk away with and know, and will resonate with them, and won't just go in one ear and out the other in 2 days, that 6 months or a year later, they can still remember that. And so if you want to get emotional content, you have to figure out what those themes are. And then you have to, every decision from that point is based on those themes. Who are you going to speak with? Where are you going to film with them? What questions are you going to ask? What follow-up questions should you be prepared to ask? And it's really about digging deeper. A lot of times people, when they get on camera, they're very, very uncomfortable the first 10 or 15 minutes of being on there. And so when I do interviews, I like to interview them for 45, 60 minutes. And a lot of corporations are not used to that. They're not comfortable with that. They're like, this person's time is being taken away from their everyday job. But the sound bites and the realness and the rawness of what I'm getting from that person during the interview at minute 45 or minute 58 is so much stronger than what I'm getting in the first 5 to 10 minutes. I mean, you interview people and they're recorded, as we're seeing right now. And I'm sure that people loosen up and soften up as you know, you get 5, 10, 15 minute mark. And so it's really just about, they'll give you a very generic answer the first one or two times that you ask them a question. And then you keep digging and you say, well, why? Why is that important to you? How do you feel that way? So for us, it's all about, we don't like to plan anything. We'll show the interview questions ahead of time to the client, but not the person who's actually being interviewed, because we don't want them to get flustered. We don't want them to try to prepare an answer. They're not trained professional actors or actresses. And so, you know, I want them to say whatever it is they're saying because they believe it, not because they feel like they have to say it. And so it's just about sitting down with them, having a real conversation. Why do you like working here? What is it about the cause here? And then if they give you a generic answer, dig a little deeper and just keep saying why. And eventually you'll get at the heart of why they feel passionate about something. And then that will come through. And there's a lot to that. There's a lot to doing. I mean, a lot of it's done in post-production and building out story arcs, and we can get into film theory, but really it's about you have to start with doing a really strong interview and getting people to be themselves.
Yeah. That's so interesting. Literally yesterday I finished an interview and I told my husband, I said, I don't know if I'm doing this right or not, because I feel like people really start to loosen up with me and engage with me more around that 15, 20 minute mark. But I also want to respect people's time and not be like, hey, can I have an hour of your time? But exactly what you just said, I said that verbatim to him, you know, what do you do with that? And I guess editing is the part that comes in, and you just need to get better at editing stuff and being able to just engage for a little bit. That's some really good.
Yeah, I mean, it just depends on how important that is to the company. I think the company, I said that the prices have come down on videos, and they have. With that said, it's still expensive. It's still a big, you know, if you're going to spend all of this time and energy coordinating it, hiring us, having us come out, ultimately distributing this however you're going to distribute it, whether it's on your website, on email, social media channels, or something else, if you're going to put all of that into it, the difference between your colleague spending 40 minutes with the video crew and 60 minutes is 20 minutes. Like, you shouldn't be making your decision based on that 20 minutes. You know, and that person's day is important and their time is important, but that extra 20 minutes is super important to the quality of the video.
That's good. I have one more technical question for you.
Yeah.
It's about recruiting a team and building a team. Like you said, you did it on your own for 3 years. What was that transition like, and how did you build successfully the team that you have now?
Yeah, it was super scary. I mean, that was I felt like everything really laid in that first hire. I felt like it was exponentially so much more important than anything else I might decide on. for years. It was, did I pick the right person? Because picking the right person was going to mean the difference between us moving ahead and speeding up and getting to where we were trying to get to much faster, and picking the wrong person was just going to be potentially even a negative. So I went way above and beyond with that first hire, where I remember we weren't like a known name, and so we weren't getting a ton of applicants, but we did get about 325 applicants that first time around. And I looked through every single resume, and I looked through every single portfolio and a lot of the videos, and it took a tremendous amount of time. And then I did, you know, multiple interviews in person. And I think that what I've learned over time is there are ways there are things to look for that will save you a lot of time. And I'll give you one. The cover letter. I say very specifically in the job description now, if you submit a generic cover letter, you will not be considered for this position. And honestly, like, the best candidates always end up not just writing a cover letter, but a really well thought out. They show off how they think, how they strategize. And they also show that they really want to be at Greenbuzz Agency, and they're going to pay attention to detail. And so that can really, you know, now when we put out a job posting, depending on what the role is, for a producer position or for an editor position, we'll get 800 to 1,000 people in 2 weeks applying. And that's a really quick way, because out of those 800 to 1,000 people that have applied, maybe 50 to 70 of them have really written a solid cover letter. And so you can really just look at those and you'll get the best applicants that way. But I think as a second point about talent and, you know, talent becomes everything. When you start a business, at first it's about, how do I make enough money to have a business and to have this lifestyle that I want? And then at a certain point, it's about, what is the quality? What do we represent? What are we trying to do here? Why are these other people vested in this? What, you know, why are they putting their career into the pot with Greenbuzz Agency? And it becomes a lot about talent recruitment, talent retention. And I think, you know, with video production, if you're asking, you know, someone that's not in New York or LA, they would say, oh, well, all of the talent must be in New York or LA. That's where the TV industry is. That's where Hollywood is. You know, that's where movies take place. And so how do you recruit talent to DC, which isn't necessarily as known for it? And so I think you have to have other things going for it. You have to have, like, the quality of your videos have to be a certain thing. You have to identify with who your clients are. And you just have to be able to showcase that you have a fun workplace where you're going to have a lot of creative control and be able to make a difference and be able to say, I shaped this. I was a part of this. I was a part of this growth. I was a part of this award. I was a part of these views. You have to have some sort of mission. And so that does develop as you go from being a one-person entity to a three-person entity to a 20-person entity and so forth.
If you went from freelance solo entrepreneur to getting 350 applicants your first time, you must have been doing a lot of work on your own before you started hiring out.
Yeah, I mean, when we finally hired out, we hired three people. So we, you know, it was just kind of, we had two big clients come in at the same time. It was over a summer, and they both picked us to do not just one video. I mean, that in video, that's a big thing. You know, you look at other industries, you look at PR and advertising and marketing, and in those cases, a lot of times they're set up as retainer-based models where every month they're getting a certain amount of money. With video, it's one-off projects. And so you do have to sort of get that buy-in from an organization, like, you're going to create all of our video content, or you're going to create a lot of it, to feel like you have that consistency. And we have a very different approach here. A lot of video production companies, they're built off of freelancers. They have tons and tons of freelancers. We have all full-time staff, and we're able to do that because there are certain organizations. I mentioned Hilton before, I mentioned Make-A-Wish before, that have said, you are our production company. You're going to create a lot of content for us in a given year, and that is the backbone for us being able to go and do more of a full-time staff approach. And they love it because the full-time staff actually knows their whole media library. They know what their brand is trying to say. They know all the other videos that have come before and what the goal and objective of those videos were. And so, you know, they appreciate not having to teach a new production crew each time what they're all about and what they're trying to do. So, again, I don't even know if I, again, went way off topic there.
No, but this is so good. This is so interesting. I want to respect your time, because I told you right at 30 minutes. So before our very last question, where can people connect with you? And if they want to learn more about video production and just what you guys do, where can they find you?
Yeah, if you want to connect with me, I'm on LinkedIn. You can just type in my name and connect, and I'll be happy to connect with you. I'm not very active on Twitter anymore, so I wouldn't check out the Twitter page. But if you want to hear kind of our thoughts, our philosophy, our strategy, we have a blog. It's the GreenBuzz Agency blog on our website. And we put a lot of time and energy into it. You know, it's you can get anything there, from case studies on how do we go about actually making a video that won an Emmy, to just what is going on in the industries. How are people using drones? How are different industries? How's real estate industry using it? What is going on in the world of virtual reality? What should you need to know as a business person? So there's a lot of content there. We're very consistent. We put a lot of time and effort into it. We take it very seriously. So yeah, I think that's the best way for people to kind of follow us is to do that. And definitely feel free to check out our videos. Yes. on our portfolio. I'd love for people to watch. I'd love to get feedback on that.
They are sick.
Thank you. That's awesome.
Incredible work. Incredible work. I will link all of that up in the show notes, so guys, definitely check that out. Very last question. One of the pieces of your story that I really love is you wanted to bring this human emotion into this industry that wasn't really familiar with that or accepting of that. And so we talk a lot about unconventional leadership and introducing new ideas and being somebody who goes against the grain and willing to do that. That's kind of discouraging at times, though, because it's met with a lot of resistance. And sometimes you think, am I doing the right thing? Should I fall into the beaten path? You know, because paving your own is a little bit difficult. What words of advice would you have to emerging leaders, people who are coming up and doing their own thing and are unconventional in their approach? Do you have any?
Yeah, I definitely have a couple pieces of advice. One is whatever you're passionate about, read as much as you can. Get as many viewpoints as possible from blogs, from books, from videos, anywhere and everywhere. Take all of that information on whatever that topic is, boil it down, and get your own belief behind it and say, like, this is where I stand on this issue. And then tell everyone you know what your stance is, and go out of your way to talk to the thought leaders within that space about what your vision is and how you view it and why you view it that way. And I think they'll respect you, whether they agree with you or not. I think they'll respect that you took a stand on something and that you're educated and that you have a basis for why you believe what you believe. My second piece of advice would be, if you're about to enter into something, if you're about to enter into, let's say, starting a business, go and meet with a bunch of other people who have done exactly that and have a conversation and pick their brains about not just what worked, but what didn't work. Because what you hear when you hear what didn't work, that's going to save you a lot of time. What worked for them might work for you, but what didn't work for them probably will not work for you too, and they will have saved you a lot of time. So those are the two biggest pieces of advice I have.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. If you have not subscribed yet, please head over to iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts and hit that subscribe button. And also, if you have a second, leave us a review. Lastly, we have a private Facebook group. If you are looking for a tribe of like-minded leaders who are unconventional in their approach, but dedicated to making an impact, head over to Facebook and type in unconventional leaders, and we will be sure to add you. You guys have a great week.